The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect that of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Out, right? We got a Bureau of Corrections here on the mic. They ain't on the line this morning, like when they're calling. We got them on the mic. Okay, so it's all good. I don't know why the director is in panic mode. You know, she's going to be okay. I got to tell her to relax and we're going to be all right. And I did pull her file, so we're going to have some fun with that. Let me get the COVID-19 and the Wall Street housekeeping out the way, because I was in a rush to document these COVID numbers. Of course, you know, yesterday they were dealing with some maintenance, the database maintenance, so we didn't give any numbers because it was the same as Tuesday morning. However, as of last night, here are the numbers. COVID-19, U.S. Virgin Islands, 17,887 persons tested. 22 of those tests are pending. So of the 17,875 confirmed tests, we have 1,197 positives, 16,668 negative, for a percentage ratio of 93.3 to 6.7. And of course, we were down at 93.0. So, you know, if you're moving the percentages by a tenth of a percent at this juncture, that means you're doing very good. And the proof with respect to that is as follows. Yesterday's sample, territory-wide, was arguably, I don't even have the superlatives to talk about it. That's just, I love it. 415 negative and 6 positive. Now, I don't like the 6 per se, but the 415 negative territory-wide and 6 positive is a ratio of 69.167 to 1. Now, you ask any jurisdiction, and they could tell you they could live with that. The sample was so good, right, that St. Thomas had 193 negative and 6 positive. St. Croix had 202 negative and 1 positive. That's 7, right? And I told you that the overall number is 6. That's because St. John was 20 negative and negative 1 positive, which means they probably had a false positive. You know what I'm saying? So, in that regard, you know, we could live with that. And we just want to get a 6 number down over in St. Thomas, keeping it flat in the low single digits, if any at all, and we're good to go. Okay, so 415 to 6. Yesterday was a good day on Wall Street. 27,940. The Dow closed that. Up 439.58. That's about 1.6%. And of the 30 blue chip commodities, 26 gains. You know, Boeing and Goldman Sachs have suffered losses yesterday, but once again, 26 out of 30. That's about 86-87% positivity rate on Wall Street, so we can live with that. So that's what we got with the housekeeping. Got some other items to touch on at the top of the 9 o'clock hour, and then we got Alma Heiliger coming on and the candidate speak, and that'll take us up to 9:50, and then we'll do the wrap. And Thursday will be history. But in the meantime, and in between time, I want to introduce one childhood friend and the leadership from the Virgin Islands Bureau of Corrections. We've got in the house director. That's the title?
That's it.
Winnie Testenbach out of the rock.
Yes.
How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Definitely, I tell Winthrop Maduro, I say yo. Okay?
Okay, I will. You're
looking out. And of course, Peter Abraham.
A pleasant good morning to you and the listening audience. Yes, man, it's fantastic. Happy to see you here, man.
Yeah, man, I'm doing something, you know.
I'm telling you.
They got me waking up early in the morning, like, because I like to work from like 8 at night to 8 in the morning, but...
This view, you can't beat this view.
It is,
I mean, I'm telling you, the ocean look wonderful. You can see the islands. I mean, this is what you call living in paradise.
It's lovely. Yes. This is, you know, worth waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
I'm telling you.
So we're good. So before we delve into the everyday run-ins and the future of the Bureau of Corrections, Director Testimon, good morning once again.
Good morning.
It's my understanding, you know something? Who is Winnie Testimon?
Who am I? I am Winnie Testimark. I am born and raised in the Virgin Islands, St. Thomas, Virgin Islands. I left there when I was 13 years old, and I lived in New York and Miami, Florida, ultimately. I have a career. My career expanded over 34 years in criminal justice arena. Mm-hmm. I worked for Miami-Dade County most of those years, 29 and a half years. I have 3 children, 2 boys and 1 girl, ages 35 to 22. I have a degree. I have a master's degree in management, a bachelor's degree in organizational leadership. I am a certified PREA, Prison Rape Elimination Auditor for Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. I'm a certified jail manager by the American Jail Association. I'm also a chairperson for the American Correctional Association, where I audit jails and prisons and community corrections around the world. So those are just some of the things that I do. Currently, my assignment here in the Virgin Islands, I'm grateful to the Brian Roach administration for this opportunity to come and assist the territory in helping the territory get to a better place as it relates to the Bureau of Corrections, helping us get out of the consent decree, which has plagued the Virgin Islands for over 30 years.
Okay, we're going to get into the details of the consent decree. So right off the top, you ain't worrying about the people them who don't want to label agency heads as political appointees and all that stuff. You got your paper them to let them know, not me.
Oh, definitely. I am definitely not one of those political appointments.
Good. Now, St. Thomas University?
I got my master's degree at St. Thomas University. That's out of Florida, Miami.
It used to be Biscayne College.
Yes, it used to be Biscayne College.
No, St. Thomas. I tell you, I do a little homework.
Okay. Yes.
For those of you who don't know, there is a university in the Miami area by the name of St. Thomas University.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a private college, Catholic University.
That's right. So yes. I graduated from University of Miami, so yes. I know that area. Now, Peter, your title with Bureau of Corrections is
Programs and Grants Manager.
Programs and Grants Manager. Okay, that's good. So we'll get into detail now. Before I get into that, I want to ask a question. You are in charge of the entire Dade County or a specific facility in Dade County?
No, a specific, as accreditation manager, I retired as an executive lieutenant. Mm-hmm. And there I held many titles as accreditation manager for Miami-Dade County, where in that capacity, I was responsible for accrediting the facilities there.
No, the big one down in Homestead.
No, that's the state. Miami-Dade County is county facilities.
So the one at Homestead is not a Dade County?
That's a state facility.
Okay, good. Yes. That's the one you see when you're flying over, when you're flying into Miami and you look down, you actually see when the plane is circling, you can actually see the facility.
Well, I must say to you, you see two facilities. You see one of Miami-Dade County facilities and you see South Florida Reception Center. Okay. They're both side by side.
Yeah. Yes. That's to the south of Miami International Airport.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
We're good.
Yes.
Okay,
Metro West is one of our largest facilities. Yes. It houses 2,500 inmates.
Okay, good. You say this assignment, you look at it as an assignment, or you have been hired to be the director of the Bureau of Corrections? You got a loan from somebody?
No. When I say an assignment, because I consider this an assignment, because I enjoy what I do. I shouldn't even say an assignment. I enjoy what I do. I'm not on loan from anyone. I retired from Miami-Dade County in 2015.
What you were doing between the consulting business between 15 and 19 when you came here?
Yes. I've had my consulting business for over 10 years. Well, no, about 15 years, really. So I started my consulting business way before I retired. Matter of fact, in 2009, the special master then, Ms. McCampbell, brought me here to the territory to assist Golden Grove in the consent decree to help the agency with policies and procedures.
That was when?
In 2009.
Way back then?
Yes.
You were still working for
Miami-Dade County. Yes.
Okay. So you were on loan then, or?
No, I wasn't on loan. That was just something that I was doing.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And at that time, that was my first time at Golden Grove. And at that time, I said that if God ever gave me the opportunity to come back and help my people, that I will.
Okay.
So lo and behold, the Brandon Roach administration offered me the opportunity. So okay. Here I am.
Okay, good. Now, swinging over to Mr. Abraham. Good morning, Peter, once again.
Good morning.
Tell us about grants and that whole dynamic currently where the prison system is concerned in the Virgin Islands.
Okay. The philosophy of the director and the Brian and Roach administration is about transforming lives. And one of the things I did when I first came on board was that I took a real look at the inmate, or they call him now, new citizen reentry program at the Golden Grove facility. Well, I shouldn't say Golden Grove, because when we talk about reentry, we're talking about the entire territory, both St. Thomas and St. Croix. And one of the things you find out right away is that there really was no reentry program. I mean, there was a lot of programs in place where that somebody would decide to their, Neville, I want you to come and talk to the inmates about X, Y, and Z, or I want you to give a course on anger management. But there was no plan, so that might have happened now. And then you don't hear nothing from nobody for the next several months, you know. So what we did was that we took the opportunity to hire a consultant to really dig into the reentry program and really flush out what a reentry program should look like, feel like, smell like, taste like, and put it together in a manual so that, you know, when Peter Abrahams or Director Testemark isn't there, it has a life of it continues. Mm-hmm. It continues moving on. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing right now is that we're in the final phases of putting together that program. And the program touches upon the vocational, the educational, and the what we refer to as the fiscal aspect. That's the physical things that we need to do, like anger management, stuff like that. So it puts together a program where that instead of taking a spitball and trying against the wall and saying I want to offer this course, and if it stick, then that's the course we offer. If it doesn't, it gives a programmatic and evidence based system so that we could facilitate. One of the things we found out was that as we went through the process, there wasn't a real assessment of individuals when they came into the facility. When I say assessment, meaning that, find out what educational level the person was, what state of mind the person was, and then offer things to help them be a better person, to be a better citizen. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing now is that we're going through the process, and we're working. The consultant had put together some assessment tools that we can utilize so that we would put every person that comes through the system through those tools, and it would define us what level they are for education, what their interests are for vocation, and then what other special needs they have. And then as the case manager would meet with them and then give them the proper tools or put them through the proper program so that they could better themselves.
We take our breaks at the 20 and the 40 on the top of the hour. So we're on the first break right now. When we come back, I want to ask you a question, Director Testemark and Sir Abraham, about whether or not we should legislate that area, that educational area, with respect to, should it be mandated instead of the correction system doing that on its own, that we know where a particular inmate may be from an educational standpoint. I think that would be a good idea. That's just my suggestion, but we'll see what happens. Analyze this on a lovely Thursday, September the 10th, 2020. We'll be back right after this break.
Control when a disaster strikes, but you can prepare. Make a plan today. Review your written plan regularly. Update your emergency supply kit to include personal items. Decide what to do with your pets if you need to evacuate. Identify which shelter is appropriate for you and your family. Make sure you are aware of any guidelines due to COVID-19. Secure your home and your personal and financial documents. Make a plan, build a kit, stay informed, and help your neighbors. Visit our website at doh.vi.gov.
On Point represents democracy in action every day with the sharpest guests and the sharpest listener calls. Our audiences often know as much as we do, connecting us in ways you won't find anywhere else. I'm David Folkenflik. Hear what you don't always see. Join Meghna Chakrabarty and me for the next On Point.
On Point, 10 a.m. weekdays on WTJX FM 93.1, NPR in the Virgin Islands.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep. When you roll out of bed, bleary-eyed and groggy, if you're like me, the first thing on your mind is getting something to wake you up. So turn on the radio. NPR's daily news program, Morning Edition, has been working through the night to get you the news you need. It's as essential to your morning as a good cup of coffee. So hit the ground running by listening to Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition at 5 a.m. weekdays on WTJX FM 93.1 NPR in the Virgin.
And we are back on Analyze This with the leadership of the Virgin Islands Bureau of Corrections. We got Director Winnie Testemark here in the studio. Peter, what your title be again?
Programs and Grants Manager.
Programs and Grant Manager out of the West.
Out of the West.
Peter Abraham. And it's my understanding that the number two in command for the agency is on the line. Good morning, Wincha Maduro. What's up?
No, that's Mr. Real Faulkner.
Mr. Faulkner? Oh, I apologize.
Yes. Maduro is our public information officer.
Oh, he's a PIO. Okay, yes, I thought PIO. Oh, he's number two in the ICM party. That's what he said. That's what he said. Yeah, that's a mistake. Mr. Faulkner, good morning.
Good morning, Senator. How are you doing?
Good. Introduce yourself to the people of the Virgin Islands.
Yeah, I'm Real Faulkner. I'm the Assistant Director for Administration and Compliance for the Bureau of Corrections. A pleasure to be with your listening audience this morning.
Okay, good. Let me ask the... Okay, we got into the introductions part and all that fluff. Let me start dealing with some data here. What's the prison population, Mr. Faulkner?
We have on St. Croix, 133 inmates and detainees, and on St. Thomas, we have 71 inmates and detainees.
So we got total...
About 200. Those numbers fluctuate daily.
Obviously, because people come in and people leave it, Mr. Faulkner, right?
Correct.
We want them living there forever. We actually want that number down to zero. You know what I'm saying? So yeah.
Exactly.
So that's what we're dealing with. So 204 right now, and that could be 206 tomorrow. It could be 202 tomorrow as well, right? That's what you're saying?
That's correct.
Okay, good. Now, both facilities are permanent facilities. Educate the public with respect to how the system is structured in terms of those who are trials are pending and those who have been convicted and are fully incarcerated.
Well, the facility on St. Thomas was never really meant to be a jail. Mm-hmm. It was only meant to be a holding temporary holding facility. Mm-hmm. And over time, of course, it became a jail. We had a jail constructed on St. Thomas that was called the Alva Swan Annex in sub-base, but that was destroyed by the hurricane 3 years ago. So what's happened in the interim is that the St. Thomas jail has become really more than it was originally supposed to be. Now, you asked about the breakdown. Inmates are people who have gone to trial and have been convicted and have been sentenced, mm-hmm. as opposed to detainees who are just arrested and they are awaiting trial.
What's the ballpark number for detainees on average?
Well, I would say on St. Thomas, we only have 5 inmates, so the rest are all detainees.
Okay.
So of the 71 or so people at the St. Thomas jail, 5 of them are inmates, people who have actually been convicted mm-hmm. of a crime, and then the remaining number of them are detainees awaiting trial.
That's a high percentage, Mr. Faulkner.
It was meant to be a holding facility. Once they're convicted, then mm-hmm. a lot of the times they're sent to St. Croix, which is our main prison mm-hmm. facility for people who have been convicted of a crime.
Over 90% of the 71 that you mentioned in St. Thomas are detainees.
Yes.
That's correct, because it's supposed to be a detainee holding facility.
Yeah.
So I know there's been a lot of talk in the legislature about a speedy trial act for the Virgin Islands. So until those cases are called and those people are tried and either acquitted or convicted, then held at the facility.
What's the percentage of detainees in the 133 at the Golden Grove facility?
I'm going to have to look at those numbers and get that back to you in a few minutes.
Yes, yeah, sure. Scrub them and we're good for that. We like numbers to keep the public educated.
I can help them
Director
with those
Testimony,
numbers.
Go ahead. Yeah.
At the Golden Grove, the John Bell facility, mm-hmm. 49 of those 138
133
mm-hmm. is detainees.
Wow.
49. That's the last number that I saw, 49.
We could scrub that out. That's a much lower percentage than in St. Thomas.
Yes.
Okay? So we got that out of the way. Now, Peter, you could relate to this question. Mm-hmm. Even though there is a legitimate answer, this is a question for Director Testimark, right? Why St. Croix got to be the location for the prisoners in the Virgin Islands?
Why does St. Croix?
Yeah.
That's the way it was.
Well,
to be honest with you, why does St. Croix have to be the place for the prisoners? Well, St. Croix has the land. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to keep it real. St. Thomas really doesn't have the land. A prison, you need to have space, you know, so that the inmates could have all the different vocational programs, place to put those things. St. Thomas, they don't have that logistically. They really don't. Whereas St. Croix here, you have the land space, you know, where the facility is huge. So the inmates are able to go from classroom to classroom. We're able to build a better facility that's more accommodating to help rehabilitate the inmates, the rehabilitation that's necessary.
Okay, so yes. I had a friend, his name is Sang Wang. He lives in St. Thomas. I'm sure you probably will meet him, so if you don't know him, right? He used to live in St. Croix, originally from Antigua, and his nickname is Sang Wang, and he lives in St. Thomas, right?
Uh-huh.
So his son was over here playing the league baseball one day, and we had 2+2 that night. The little league tournament we have every summer. And he used to say, St. Thomas, St. Croix got land. Well, St. Thomas got money. Just teasing us. So when you say St. Croix got the land, you see what I'm saying? My mind ran back. But it's a factual statement.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because we are 84 square miles and saying
it's 32.
St. Thomas is 32. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
But the reason why I asked that is because when we were children, there was a decision to build the federal detention center, or was it a local detention center across from Anna's Hope? We have a facility there. You can't see it now because it's all bush. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And one of the concerns, right, back then, and it was a political thing, mm-hmm. was that you're building that prison, and that was a maximum security, the way they constructed it with mm-hmm. all the fencing and all that stuff. And they said, and are you devaluing the property of the veterans, because a lot of the veterans live in Anna's Hope right across the street. So that was a concern then. It's a legitimate concern.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Yes.
But at the same time, you need facilities to house inmates, to house
exactly.
to house prisoners. So
exactly.
so that's a realistic, you know, yeah. dynamic that you're dealing with. So that's the reason why I asked that, because I don't want the public to think that, well, we think it's okay that the main prison's on St. Croix, and so be it. It can't be like that, you know what I'm saying?
Right. And it's funny that you said that, because nobody wants a prison in their backyard.
That's
I mean,
the point that I was coming to.
Here, not only to the territory, right. across the United States. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants a prison. So you will find that most prisons are built way out.
Isolated.
Yeah. You know, by themselves.
Because remember, we got university right there on the corner.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the public safety
Institute.
The Motor Vehicle Bureau,
yes.
Which used to be one of the main facilities for the Virgin Islands PD. You know what I'm saying? So,
okay.
But, you know, when you're strapped for land and resources, yeah. sometimes, you know, yeah. you make sacrifices.
Right.
So we've gotten the logistical thing out of the way.
I just want to add on to that, too. A lot of people don't realize that in these prison facility is like a mini city.
Yes.
Because you have a hospital. You have a cafeteria. You have the dormitories. You have the recreational.
Medical.
You know, you have anything that you could think of in a town.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
It's within a city.
And you're obligated to provide that.
That's exactly.
Yes, we're obligated to provide a constitutionally sound facility to provide the needs, to take care of their needs. But I need to make a correction. When I was telling you about the numbers, I flipped it.
Mm-hmm.
I told you 49. No, that's our sentence population is 59, mm-hmm. and the others are detainees. So please forgive me.
So we have a majority of detainees.
Yes.
And 59 inmates.
Yes.
Okay.
I also have to tell you that the majority of our sentence population,
mm-hmm.
they are away in the states. They are held in Virginia Department of Corrections and also in Florida.
What's the name of the facility in Virginia?
It's they have five facilities: Wallens Ridge, Red Onion.
The one I was talking about.
Okay, yeah, it's a couple of them that the Virgin Islands population fluctuate between the different classification levels.
At a cost to the people of the Virgin Islands.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Okay.
Yes.
You said there's one in Florida. You said?
Yes. Currently, the private corrections care. They're the ones. They're in their custody. They take care of them.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's at a detention facility in Florida.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Okay, so we've gotten that out the way.
Yes, I need to make that correction. I apologize.
We like to make sure we get facts here.
Yes.
We're into the innuendo and the speculation.
Right.
Now, the consent decree, it's been in effect for decades. Why is that?
Mr. Faulkner?
Yeah, it's been in effect for over 34 years, Senator, on St. Croix. And, of course, we had a separate consent decree on St. Thomas, covering the St. Thomas facility. So it's one of those things that's been with us for a very long time, older than some of our correction officers who work in the facility, to be honest. And so the push with this administration is to try to do everything we can to put us in a position to finally get out from under it.
Now, Mr. Faulkner, the primary reason, the original reason for the consent decree in the 80s was?
It was overcrowding, poor and decrepit facilities, and also lack of adequate medical and mental health care. Back then, there wasn't a psychiatrist on staff like we have now. We didn't have enough nurses. It took a while for them to get medical care or dental care. Back then, for this consent decree involving St. Thomas, we had somewhere in the neighborhood of between 200 and 250 people at that facility, whereas now we only have, you know, between 65 and 71. So it's been a big difference over what's happened and transpired over the last couple of decades.
Overcrowding infrastructure and medically deficient.
Exactly.
34 years, Mr. Faulkner. It's not your fault, but that's too long, man. Jeez, some bread, man.
It's too long. It's one of the longest consent decrees in the United States.
History.
Yes, And so what has to happen is we have to finally say, you know what, instead of paying all these experts and monitors all this money to tell us what we need to do to run a jail, let's run it ourselves. Let's figure it out ourselves. Save that money. Invest it in other things. We need classrooms. We need hospitals. We need all better roads. We need all these things. Let's do what we need to do to finally get the Virgin Islands out from under these two very costly consent decrees.
And another problem there is a local mentality where a lot of local people believe that local people can't lead. Right. And that has led to us buying into the notion that we need to be bringing people from wherever they at with all these fancy resumes and all that stuff. And we have the talent here. We just playing politics and don't want to give people who are here locally with the ability the necessary titles and jobs that come and responsibilities that come with positions that are necessary so that we could get out of this consent decree.
Exactly.
Okay,
that's
good.
Exactly it.
Okay.
And like you said, a lot of the things we can figure out ourselves. Director Tessemark has over 30 years of correctional experience. She knows how to run a prison and a jail. And that's the type of person we need to get us out from under, finally, these very long-standing consent decrees.
Okay, well, so let me ask this question, Director Tessemark. I like that flow there, Director Tessemark. Right. How much it costs us, the people of the Virgin Islands, this consent decree? Ballpark figure, we don't have to be specific. On an annual basis?
On an annual basis, about 20 plus million.
Annually?
Annually.
What?
Yep.
Yeah.
Peter, you serious?
Yeah. Dead serious.
Yeah.
People. $20 million on average.
Yeah, because you have to think about, we have to send people off island, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when they go off island, think of all the medical care, all the things that you have to do, all the psychiatric care, that plus every month, those same, imagine this. You have to pay somebody to tell you, right, that you ain't doing a good job. you have to pay somebody.
Just the thought of that.
And not only that, but since it's two different consent decrees, like Mr. Faulkner mentioned, right, you got two different people you have to pay. You have to pay the one for St. Croix, and you have to pay the one for St. Thomas, so it's not even a consolidated effort.
Mm-mm. Director, you want to chime in there?
Yeah, so when you couple it with what the territory, what we're paying for taking care of the inmates, our inmates abroad, plus what it costs us to maintain the inmates here, plus paying the experts, it's a pretty high figure.
Pretty high?
Yeah.
don't be modest on this beautiful Thursday morning. That's excessive.
Another thing to remember too, Senator, is that we have mentally ill people who have to be cared for at a specific facility that we can't provide the level of care here in the Virgin Islands.
Yeah.
That's extremely expensive.
It's very expensive.
You're talking about $450 a day per person at that facility.
Yeah.
So you add that up, it becomes very costly.
Yeah. Wow.
So when you look at all those different factors, I feel that, and the Brian Roach administration, they are very, we're very optimistic because that's why we're pushing so hard to resolve a lot of those issues, to help bring that money back here into the local government, because so it would definitely help us. A mental health facility, you know, mental health, the jails, the number one mental health hospitals around the United States. That's just a fact, because why? A lot of the mental institutions have closed down. Here in the territory, we don't have one, you know, and it's the goal of this administration to have a mental health facility that could take care of the individuals. That way, they don't have to go away. We don't have to send them away to get the care that they desperately need.
I was just doing the math in my head. So we're talking between $13,000 and $14,000 a month for a mentally
ill,
provided for inmate.
Yes.
That's correct.
Jeez, but then you multiply that by 12.
That's correct.
Wow. Yeah, and we didn't even get to the actual cost to run the facilities here in the territory.
That's right.
Exactly.
Okay, we're just talking about consent decree obligations, right?
Yes.
What's that figure, ballpark, again? When you went before the budget committee this year, before the finance committee, What was your budget request? Ballpark.
The budget, I think it was 30 something million. Well, I asked for 46.
46.
I asked for 46. However, the budget had to be cut because of the COVID-19.
Yeah.
So we ended up with 29, but they haven't settled on that yet.
We still have
to go back through the process. Yeah. And there's some things that we asked for to be put back into the budget. So we're hopeful that the senators.
So you asked for 46. You budgeted for 29. You're telling
29.
Me 20 is consent decree. So basically, you're saying you're at. Let's say if they were to settle at a median of 35 million, more than half of that money is consent decree applications.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. We take our final break with the leadership here. I'm sorry that today ain't a 2-hour show because you really should be a 2-hour guest. Mm-hmm. Based on what we're dealing with, but we could walk on that again some other time, right? Then you could call in if you can't make it, right?
Definitely.
We appreciate that. Analyze this on Thursday morning. We got the leadership from the Bureau of Corrections, Winnie Testamark, Peter Abraham, and Rhea Faulkner.
Yes.
Okay, so again, some more details. We're going to talk COVID-19 and whatever else we can squeeze in over the next 20 minutes. We'll be back right after this.
¿Conoce la diferencia entre Medicare y Medicaid? Medicare es un seguro médico para personas mayores de 65 años, menores de 65 años con incapacidad y personas de cualquier edad con enfermedad renal en etapa terminal. Medicaid le ayuda a pagar los costos médicos si tiene ingresos limitados. Visite Medicare.gov o llame al 1-800-MEDICARE para obtener más información.
Planetary Radio is all about the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society. I'm so proud to know that our show is now part of the terrific WTJX lineup. I hope you'll join us for our next journey across the final frontier. Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. here on WTJX FM 93.1 NPR in the Virgin Islands.
You've already discovered that this NPR station is an excellent source of news and entertainment, but did you know that this station is a nonprofit? Public radio is for the public, available to all free of charge. That is possible thanks to people just like you who give what they can to support open access to information. So thank you for listening and for making all of this possible.
Please donate right now at WTJX.org.
And we are back in effect. Analyze this Thursday, September the 10th. Of course, tomorrow is 911. We want to make sure we give props to the memories of all those people who were lost in America on September 11, 2001. 19 years tomorrow. Seems like yesterday, Ms. Testamark, when this happened.
Wow.
911.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Tomorrow will make 19 years. So that was shocking. Peter,
yes,
and I,
it was.
Peter and I were here working for the government.
You
the
sure
central government back in the day. I think Peter being a procurement then, right?
Actually,
in 2001.
Actually, I was working for UVA. I was on the UVA campus, and I remember when somebody said, "But wait, that plane just went into that building."
Yeah.
And I got up out of my chair. There was a TV. You know, they had the monitors for the student.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and I looked and I said, and then it happened a second time.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't see the first one. I see the second one too.
Yeah.
You know,
I was like,
this is crazy.
This is, you know.
Yeah. You know, so that was shocking.
That was something.
Yeah. We'll deal with that. Now, let's get back to some more details. COVID-19, you had a situation. Director. Not Ms. Testamark. Director. you had an outbreak.
Yes.
Over there in the St. Thomas facility.
But
before we get to that, St. Croix been clean all the way through?
Yes, thank God. We're grateful to the great work of the medical team and the staff. Department of Health came in for St. Croix facility and they did a testing, and all the inmates that they tested, that were tested at that time, mm-hmm. were negative.
Mm-hmm.
And we have offered free testing for the staff, and the majority of them have taken advantage of it. And thanks, thank God, none of them have come up positive
as of Minister 9 on Thursday,
yes.
September 10th, 2020.
Yes.
Okay, you never know what's going to happen.
Exactly.
St. Croix has a perfect return. Okay?
Yes,
that's good.
Thank God for that.
What happened in St. Thomas?
St. Thomas, we had two inmates that were tested positive. And once they were tested positive, Department of Health came in and they tested. And of those tests that they did, of all the inmates, 17 were positive and 3 staff members were positive also.
So we had a number of 20 in St. Thomas.
Total, yes.
Now, based on the numbers Mr. Faulkner gave me, I'm surprised that wasn't higher, because if over 90% of your population, that's the right word, right?
Yes.
Your population,
yes,
is pretty much rolling. Let's use that term as opposed to permanent, right?
Yes.
That means the risk of it working its way through the system with that circular activity, for the lack of a better term, is high.
Yes, it is very high. However, we did a lot of things to mitigate. Even prior to we finding out that those individuals were positive, we amped up. The facilities was closed down. No visitors were allowed. Mm-hmm. No contractors were allowed. And we beefed up sanitation. We provided PPEs, meaning, you know, gloves, masks, and those things for. And we educated staff. We educated the inmates. So those are the things that we put in place prior to. And even to this day, we continue to do those things. So again, thanks to the great staff at Bureau of Corrections, in their respective places, the SWAN and the support staff, medical, under the leadership of Dr. Linda Cowood, our medical director, and Dr. Celia Victor, everyone working together to help minimize the spread of that. But since that happened, Department of Health declared a public health, put them on a public health quarantine. Mm-hmm. So since then, we weren't allowed to accept any new inmates into the facility unless they were positive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. But and just to, you know, since we like to delve in numbers, we actually did an analysis here on this show, mm-hmm, of the 22 days of stay-at-home order.
Yes.
And when that order went into effect. I'm trying to use the right language here. Trying to like the, a little something, a little Torah, and speak the local twang. But then I noticed the two Ayo.
No, you're making me understand.
Okay.
Two Ayo
yank just like me.
Yeah.
So you know, this is St. Dunstan's and the Good Hope with Peter Abraham. Country Day.
Country Day, right? Yeah.
On the day that the stay-at-home order went into effect, we had 226 active COVID
cases.
Positive cases here in the territory. As of last night, that number is 6 on St. Croix, 52 on St. Thomas, and 2 on St. John, for a total of 60. So so we've reduced from 226 down to 6. That's almost 75%.
Yes,
that's
solid. Awesome. Yes.
That's why
you need to analyze the number.
Yes. That's why they keep telling you, follow the science. Follow the science.
Yeah. Listen to the experts.
Listen to the experts. Yeah. Follow the science.
So we're heading in the right direction.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying?
Are.
When you reduce from 226 down to 60, I know Mr. Fox, things are numbers, man. Right? You could give some perspective with respect to what we're dealing with territory wide, COVID.
I can't speak.
I'm speaking generally in terms of your active population.
Inmate population.
Of course,
being at 226, and now we're down to 60.
Exactly.
So,
like you said, Mr. James, when you have wide community spread, it's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have staff going in and out of our facilities.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So when they're off duty, They're living their lives. They're doing things that might bring them into contact with people who they don't know,
mm-hmm,
may have the disease. And mm-hmm, then even though we have been doing temperature checks and pulse oximeter checks and verbal screenings since March or April, mm-hmm, somebody can still carry the virus without
knowing,
without having any symptoms,
that's
without
right,
knowing.
That's right.
So that's what makes it so difficult to keep everything completely COVID-19 free. But we got some very good news. You know, since the outbreak at the St. Thomas jail, the Department of Health and CDC have been collaborating with us. Mm-hmm. They've been doing retesting and testing of staff and inmates every week just to see whether the virus is spreading or receding. And thank God we had some welcome news. Mm-hmm. The last testing that we did on August 31st and September 1, those people tested, we had all negative tests.
Wow.
Results come back.
That's what, but so, and it reflects in the overall territorial
numbers. Yes. We have to remain vigilant.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It reflects in the overall territorial numbers. So that's the reason why, you know, all of our discussion does not have to be specific. It could be general in nature, because we all live here, you know, even though we might be working at a specific area, a specific agency, you know, we're still residents here. So let's get back to the Bureau of Corrections. Today is September the 10th. Where do you want to be on March the 10th, 6 months from now, Director, as it relates to corrections in the territory? What's the immediate priority goals? Of course, we're dealing with COVID, so we want to get past this pandemic and the marathon nature of the pandemic. But where do you want to be 180 days from now?
Where do we want to be 180 days from now? Well, I would like to say that we would have signed a new facility. We would like to sign ink to say, you know what, the territory has now begun the process of rebuilding, of building a new facility. Ink that deal. That's where we would like to be.
The previous director, Mr. Mulgrave, Rick Mulgrave, they had looked at, in the previous legislature, back in 2017 and 18, we were the territory was looking at what you're hoping that we could, you know, make a reality, how we go about either constructing or retrofitting. I think constructing is the proper term here. A new facility which will help us in multiple areas. So where are we in that procurement process, if that's where we're at now, or planning or vision?
Well, currently we have to do a scope of work to send out an RFP, and that's for the facility here in St. Croix. However, we're working close FEMA. We're very, very close to a final number for rebuilding the facility in St. Thomas. I guess once we agree on that number, we push back a little bit because we felt that there were some things that were left out. So we put those things in, and it went to the independent review panel. And the independent review panel should be back with their final number.
Okay.
Shortly. And once they come back with that number, I'm sure that we can agree on that. And then we could go ahead and move forward into a planning phase for St. Thomas. But for St. Croix, we're going to be developing a scope of work, the things that we want here in the territory, and putting it out there, Mr. Abram.
So, yeah. Peter, we would construct that facility right next to the John Bell facility right now?
Yeah. Well, for the same reason we pointed out earlier, nobody want a prison in their backyard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that so far, that's kind of been the approved, accepted location for the facility. So what the intention is that you would kind of... you'd like, you know, like demos part of the facility and start like a phase one.
Yeah.
And you would continue, so it would work hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we would like to see as we go through this process is that would be a vocational program for the inmates.
Mm-hmm.
What about hiring an inmate then?
That's what I'm telling you. That's what we would do.
But then full hiring. While they're in jail, they're doing something. But of course, you know, they're not compensated at the same levels as they would outside.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But it would actually get them involved in doing something.
Definitely. And
they're people too. Even though they may have violated me and you and our
property.
They are
human beings.
They're people like us, man. Yes. You know what I'm saying? And for all, you know, rehabilitation. One of the people I look up to, you know, is Malcolm X.
Yeah.
And he had his prison stint.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So
anyone can go to jail. I tell people that all the time.
Check this out, right? No. Here's this line, right? Jail make for everybody, but then everybody make for jail.
That's
right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because the confines, the closing in and hearing that gate lock every night, it's a mental thing. It's more mental. So that's why the mental aspect of prison facilities are very, very important.
It's critical.
It's not just physical. The mental aspect of taking away somebody's lateral movement and their freedom, it affects them. Now, I know with COVID-19, you're limited in what you're doing because we're living in a virtual world right now. What are we doing? Let's say COVID's behind us, and we're speaking hypothetically here. are we going into the schools and talking to our young women and young men to discourage them from this life of crime that a lot of them believe has value, and I get my props, you know, if I'm known as a thug or something to that effect? Because too many of our young men in particular are finding themselves with guns and all that stuff. Talk about that.
Yes, prior to COVID, we adopted some schools here in St. Croix and in St. Thomas. And we definitely believe going in there, talking to the individuals to tell them there's a better way, you know, of life. But there's some things that you have to do, you know, to show them that jail is not the answer, you know. Since COVID, of course, that has been hampered, but we plan to continue that because we have to reach our youth, because that's where they're being impacted at that level, really and truly, from elementary, they're being impacted. And our youths are dealing with grown-up issues that they really shouldn't have to deal with at this time. And by dealing with those issues, it impacts their decision that they make.
Peter, we have a literacy problem here in the territory. You're aware of that.
Yeah.
We've talked about it when we do see each other. I mean, bit donkey is like you've been hiding, but we have a literacy problem here in the territory. And I want to bring in Mr. Faulkner as well. How do we go about addressing our literacy problem? Because you guys can see it with the inmates in the in the prisons, what have you, or the levels of literacy or illiteracy in this particular case.
Mm-hmm. Peter,
go ahead, Mr. Faulkner, and then I'll get to Peter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. One of the things you said, Senator, was that you're an admirer of Malcolm X. But think about this. Where would Malcolm X be if there was not a library in his jail?
You're going to tell me about Malcolm? So, I could quote some things up from Malcolm now. You know what I'm saying? So I agree.
He read the dictionary back and forth two or three times.
Yes, the dictionary.
And he transformed himself. So we're working on initiatives.
Yes.
And Peter can talk to you about those that will help people transform their lives if they so choose. And you asked a really good question. Should we mandate it by the legislature that they have to take these courses, or should it be voluntary? So I'll turn it over to Peter about the programs and other initiatives that we're taking.
Mr. Abraham, out of the West.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things. I just want to say that. Do you know what the largest GED program is?
In the prison system?
That is correct. Yeah. They have the largest GED program. Do you know what is the cause of 50% of recidivism back to prison? Education. Okay. So now here we talking about that. So if we're able to take care of those issues right away, right, then we're able to handle it. What we're doing right now is that we're developing programs. We've been working with the adult ed, with the Department of Education.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that COVID-19 has brought forward is that a lot of those folks who are taking those classes are doing it remotely, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're not wrong with the prison either. The prison could do it remotely too.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. So we're working along with them in developing those programs. The other thing that we're doing is that we're investing in a tablet program where that inmates could, just like as how they would check out a book, they check out a tablet, a computer tablet.
Mm-hmm.
And on that tablet have educational programs based on your level. So you sign in, you have your own account, you sign into your account, and you start taking classes at your leisure, at your pace, through a regular tablet, you know, like how you see all these people playing with the phone.
Yeah, well.
And on that tablet program, they have do-it-yourself classes. They have self-help courses, for example, like anger management, how to deal with families. So there are these videos that that inmates could check into. But it's all designed. These tablets were designed for prison programs.
Mm-hmm.
So we're taking it to the next. We're taking it to the next level. Yeah. So if you don't come to me, I come into you. Okay.
I say help you touch us. Vacillate them from the Yankee twang to talking local.
Yes,
hey, listen, I'm making sure the people them understand.
That's right. That's right. I just want to say this, right? And you know what we're gonna do, right? We're gonna go for the top of the hour break, and then what we'll do is we'll come back and allow you like 2 or 3 minutes to articulate a closing on behalf of your agency and all that, because we have a candidate coming on at 9:10. But I don't want to just rush you off like that. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to the break, and then We take a news brief at 9, and then we come back at like 9:04. So about 4 or 5 minutes. What I want is for a short, intermediate, and long-term vision to be articulated in that 3 or 4 minute period. And then what we do is we'll set up another visit for some time down the road. That good with you, Director Tessenbach?
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, good. Mr. Faulkner, hold on a second. I got Peter Abraham here as well. We got the Bureau of Corrections leadership. We take the 9 o'clock break, and then we'll come back to wrap up this discussion and then entertain candidate Alma Heiliger from the St. Thomas, St. John Senatorial District race. Analyze this on a gorgeous Thursday here in Paradise. We'll be back. We'll be back right after this.
At the Bank of St. Croix, we believe in the power of community. When Hurricanes Irma and Maria destroyed the islands, we were there to assist families who suffered financial hardships. When nonprofit organizations are in need of support, we are there to provide financial assistance so they can continue to advocate for the causes important to our community. And now, when COVID-19 is forcing most businesses to close their doors, we are providing critical funding so they will not lose their businesses.
Didn't get to hear a Fresh Air interview you really wanted to catch? Fear not. Fresh Air Weekend gives you a second chance to hear our most entertaining conversations with actors, writers, filmmakers, and musicians. Interviews and reviews you don't want to miss on Fresh Air Weekend. Weekend is coming
soon. Fresh Air Weekend, Saturdays at 3 p.m. on WTJX-FM 93.1 NPR in the Virgin Islands.
Wash your hands, avoid sick people, and touching your face. There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.